Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. America, of course, is off the rails, way off the rails. We have a toddler as president. And every time I think things like that, I think, you know, toddlers, many of them are actually well-behaved, and I don't really want to insult all kinds of children. But I want to talk today. No one can hear me on Facebook. I apologize for that. I'm actually going to close the Facebook since no one can hear me. Sorry about that, folks. We have a technical error there, and we're going to try to fix it. But back on the radio, I want to talk about Donald Trump's tweets today and what they mean, why they're dangerous, and why sometimes they're a good thing. Not because they're good, but because sometimes when something's bad, it's best to know it's happening, right, than to not know it's happening. I also want to think, I want to start, not with the misogynistic attacks on women and not with this cruelty and not even with the attacks on the media, though I focused a lot on that on Monday. We'll get there. But just who this man is, the man that a minority of Americans elected president of the United States with a lot of help from Russians and Jim Comey. Otherwise, I'm quite sure he never would be there. But by a freak of accident and by malevolence, this guy is the president. And I don't know why this bothered me so much the other day. I knew that Donald Trump had misspellings in his tweets. I knew that, you know, obviously about Covfefe. But I guess I was looking at this tweet the other day, a tweet way back during the campaign. It was a tweet Donald Trump gave in July 2016 about Bernie Sanders people. And what he said is, looks like the Bernie people will fight, if not their blood, sweat, and tears was a total waste of time. Kane stands for opposite. Right? So he's attacking Hillary Clinton's choice, Tim Kaine, and he's trying to encourage the Bernie people to fight with the Hillary people because he knows that will help him win. And no doubt that he did help him win. But the original draft of the tweet is very interesting to me. He said their blood, sweat, and tears, and he spelled it T-H-E-R-E rather than the possessive T-H-E-I-R. Furthermore, he said it was a waste of time, and he spelled waste of time W-A-I-S-T rather than W-A-S-T-E. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm part of the East Coast elite, the elite, the Ivy League educated Virginia delegate who looks down my nose at everyone else. Maybe. Or maybe I just wonder about a man who's 70 years old and doesn't know the English language. It's not like he hasn't been educated. I want to be very clear. I am not at all attacking people who don't know how to read at age 70, maybe because they haven't had the opportunity in life to have good schooling, or maybe because they came from a very poor family, or maybe because they have some kind of reading disability, like dyslexia or something like that. But usually when you see waste spelled wrong, or their spelled wrong, common English five-letter words, it's usually in a letter or a school paper by a seven-year-old, maybe an eight-year-old. And you smile at it. You give a little, you know, smile because the kid's trying. You got to give the kid credit. But you know that's not going to happen later. And I get it. And there's some jokes about millennials that they never have to spell anything because there's always spell check on their phones and things like that. But most Americans can spell five-letter words. And even those that don't remember the difference between there and there, T-H-E-R-E and T-H-E-I-R, and the third there, T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E, most are not in sort of highly educated positions. Most are not necessarily college graduates, and even those that are certainly aren't president of the United States. I have seen, you know, it's a typo. I've seen those kinds of mistakes in print, even by adults. I can't recall, though, any adult in my life ever saying something was a waste, W-A-I-S-T, a waste of time. And, of course, in one sentence, he used there wrong and he used waste wrong. Now, why should this matter? It's just a spelling error, Mark. Why are you going so crazy on this? Well, I think it's important to note that not only is Donald Trump cruel, not only is he misogynist, not only is he narcissistic, not only is he eminently entitled and feels he's superior, he's actually quite inferior to 90-95% of educated people in America. And that's really interesting to me. The fact that the people who give him his briefings every day have said that they can't do it, they can't give him even a four-page briefing or a two-page briefing. They have to put everything on a single page, generally with lots of graphs and figures. They have to explain everything on a second or third grade level. And I remember during the campaign saying accurately that Donald Trump speaks on a second or third grade level, whereas Hillary Clinton was speaking on an eighth grade level, sometimes even a 10th or 11th grade level, and thinking at the time how politically clever it was for him to speak on a level that the vast majority of American people understand. He doesn't talk above anybody. He talks below all of us. And at the time, I guess I thought it was a strategy. I mean, my own father, who was an excellent trial lawyer for many, many years, told me when I started to practice law, there's an old trial law saying, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. When you're going before a jury, you can't go into these complicated theories of how something went down. You've got to keep it simple. Everyone has to understand you. And so even very educated people need to talk simply in order to get a message across. And I believe that. I support that. I'd be the first to complain about John Kerry or sometimes even Hillary Clinton going on to very complex topics when she needs to reach or he needs to reach a general audience. I guess it never really occurred to me a year ago. It never occurred to me that Donald Trump might not be able to think beyond a second or third grade level. I thought it was just a ploy, a technique. But as I read his tweets, as I read, and this is just one tweet that I had, I just, waste of time really jumped out to me. W-A-I-S-T, really? I mean, we make lots of jokes about Covfefe. He starts to write about press coverage and I guess falls asleep. But of course, his tweets are done at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. That's another thing that's unusual. He's got armies of people, tens of thousands of people, certainly hundreds of people who could very easily look over his tweets before he sends them. They could even automate it for him. Right? They could even set up his phone so that when he tweets, it automatically goes to 30 aides, all of whom check it for spelling and maybe even wisdom. Probably he won't allow that. And then correct it before it goes out. But we have this president who can't restrain his urges. And in some ways, it's a good thing. Wait, hold on with me there. When he attacked Mika Brzezinski, a lot of Republicans got really upset. You shouldn't be doing this, Mr. Trump. You're taking tension away from important matters. And that was true, of course. But I found myself getting madder at the Republicans than at the Donald. It is hard to get mad at a 7-year-old, even if they are acting up. Because I was surprised they were surprised. I was surprised that they thought that somehow attacking Mika Brzezinski was any meaner or more misogynist or crueler or nasty than anything else he'd done, whether it was grabbing women by their private parts, sexually assaulting them, bragging about it, using words that I don't want to use on radio, or Alicia Machado, or, well, we can go all the way back to calling Mexicans rapists, right? I mean, this guy has a pattern of being cruel and mean. But the tweets, the reason Republicans complain about the tweets, I want you to think about this. I don't think it's because they actually care. For some, maybe some on the more moderate end actually do care about the United States of America and don't think the president of his time, the United States, should be wasting his time trading, you know, foolish insults with movie stars. But I think many Republicans want the secret agenda. They want to take health care away from 22 million Americans. They want to give a massive tax cut to billionaires, even if it means hundreds of thousands of Americans have to die. That's their agenda. And it's really hard to pursue that agenda when everyone is focused on Donald's tweets. That's the thing they're angry about. That's why they focused on this one and not so many of the other ones. So in a perverse way, and it is perverse, but we live in perverse times, sometimes I'm glad he tweets. I'm glad he tells us that he's busy conspiring with the Russians and trying to keep obstruct justice and making it very clear in his tweets exactly what he's doing. In fact, Barack Obama trolled Donald Trump recently, very successfully. Way to go, Obama. Trump had said in a private meeting of Republicans that the House health care bill was mean, mean, mean. And so since the Senate bill was meaner, many people, you know, were pointing that out, that even the president thought it was mean. But the president wasn't saying whether he said it was mean or not. And actually, none of the Republicans on the record were admitting that Donald Trump called the bill mean. So President Obama said, well, the bill is mean. And then, I think it was CBS News, Donald Trump said, no. I said that first. I said that first. Sorry, Obama, you don't get to call the bill mean. I called the bill mean. He fell right into the trap. He fell into the trap because he confirmed on the record what we know he said behind the scenes, what we know everyone's saying behind the scenes. This bill is cruel. But it's so easy to trick the president. It's kind of like when you have an infant and that baby is crying and he or she wants that sharp object he shouldn't be having. So you jingle your keys, right? And he looks away. He forgets about the knife. He's concentrated on the keys. That's what we can do with our president. He's that easy to manipulate. Unfortunately, foreign leaders know this as well. Russian leaders know this. Even the North Korean leader knows this. There's a reason why this year, 2017, has had dozens of North Korean missile tests. Why this is the year, this is the month, this is the day, the week, happened just yesterday when North Korea finally managed to have enough tests to make an intercontinental ballistic missile that can now hit the United States. Currently, it can hit all of Alaska. Everyone thinks they'll be able to make it better and eventually hit the West Coast and, well, all of us. Because everyone knows he's easy to manipulate. So I want to focus this hour on Donald's tweets, on how easy he is to manipulate, how we can manipulate him back. Because when you've got a toddler ruler, just like when you know, this has happened in world history before, right? The king dies young and his son is three and his son is king, but he's three. How do you deal with things like that? How do we deal with a president who, for all intents and purposes, wets his bed? And yes, I did mean that two ways. Give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it super nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. What are we to do about Donald tweeting? Well, Randy Rainbow does parodies on YouTube, and I think his song describes the problem.
President Trump is facing bipartisan outrage over a pair of tweets in which he insulted TV host Mika Brzezinski.
President Trump sending out a bizarre video and raising the question, is his social media habit hijacking his agenda?
I think that the president is pushing back against people who attack him day after day after day.
Right now, he's sitting on a solid gold toilet all alone, and he's feeling kind of queefy. Right now, he's staring at his stubby little fingers on his phone, wondering how to spell Covfefe. Right now, he's probably just ranting and raving like a loon on his way to Mar-a-Lago. And he don't know that he's dug himself into a hole, and he's acting like a basic cyber troll, antagonizing almost everyone he meets. His vocabulary and that mouth of his make the Kardashians look like geniuses. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
Is the shocking image of the president physically attacking someone just comedy, or could it incite violence against the media?
Right now, he's typing up a tweet that he's gonna send to Hill or to Mika Brzezinski. Right now, he's working on some obsolete crack about Bill and Monica Lewinsky.
Kellyanne, I must ask you, on behalf of the countless women around the world who don't have a voice and who are silenced every day, what is your response to the growing concern from all sides that the president's misogynistic behavior is damaging not only to the Republican Party, but to the entire country?
Well, it's just not fair.
Oh, shut up.
Right now, he's probably out with Mitch and his girl Paul Ryan, just devouring his dinner. Right now, he's probably out bitching while his face keeps growing and his skin is getting thinner. Right now, he probably should maybe be focused on other stuff like healthcare. But he don't care, 'cause he's focused on his own PR and his dirty little fights with movie stars, cable news, and where Megyn Kelly bleeds. His unfortunate mental health decline is more visible than his empty line. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
Hey USA, we just elected us a mean girl.
And the next time that he tweets, oh, it better not be at me.
Actually, on second thought,
I could use the publicity.
You guys are constantly coming and asking, like, is this okay?
'Cause he's incoherent, always pissed, and indignant like sexist, misogynist, spiteful, vengeful, cruel, and indiscreet. And though he's volatile, erratic, and slightly dumb, he's got the whole world under his tiny thumb. Maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We'll be right back. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Right back after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about Trump's tweets. First, I definitely want to wish a happy July 4th to everyone. It is July 5th, obviously, but where were you yesterday? I was out in the center of it all, in the nation's capital. I don't know that I was in the United States because I was outside of all 50 states in that territory they call the District of Columbia. Still doesn't have any voting rights, but I was there, surrounded by 100,000 or so of my closest friends. Actually, of course, I was there surrounded by 100,000 people up and down the mall and watching fireworks. And I got to tell you, July 4th is a very special day to me. It just really is. I don't know how you feel about different holidays, but July 4th is always one of my favorites. It's not a holiday that is really so much about staying at home with your family. Though those are wonderful holidays. I love those too. But it's the only holiday I can think of where the goal is to go out with complete strangers and celebrate being American. I mean, we don't do that on President's Day, right? So there's just something wonderful about it. I can't think of a more civically minded holiday. And yesterday, people weren't thinking about Democrats or Republicans, but about Americans. And as much as I am not fond of our current president, there weren't. It was interesting. On the mall, I kind of thought I'd see people hawking Trump masks and things. There wasn't any of that. None of that. Just everyone with their family on their blankets and their coolers and throwing balls around and playing games. And everyone was in very, very, very good spirits. That's the way it's been for me every July 4th on the mall in Washington, D.C. And frankly, if you've never done it, it's worth doing. Oh, you got to walk some distance with your cooler and you got to go through security. And yeah, but once you get there and it rained a little, didn't matter. And I worry about our civic spirit. Now, you might think there's a contradiction there because I just spent the first half hour going over the president's tweets, arguing they're ridiculous. I even played a parody song about his tweets. And I said, yes, he's got the spelling of an 8-year-old and not a particularly smart 8-year-old. And he's mean and narcissistic and downright dangerous and, frankly, a real simpleton who's easily manipulated and controlled by others. And I didn't say that to be mean. I said it because I believe it's true. That actually distinguishes me from Donald Trump's complaints, which he knows are false. I mean, even an 8-year-old knows truth and falseness, right? When the 8-year-old denies taking the cookie from the cookie jar, that doesn't mean the 8-year-old doesn't know that he or she did that. They know. They know. They just don't want to be caught. And we need to distinguish between being mean and being accurate. Because, well, when Donald Trump attacked Mika Brzezinski, for one thing, it was a lie. He actually said that her facelift was a failure, according to Mika. It was actually such a great success that President Trump was asking, ooh, that's the first time I said that. I don't want to keep saying that. Donald Trump asked her 10 times, she said, where she got it done because he wanted to get it done himself. So he wanted the plastic surgery, and he kept asking where it got done. So I guess it was a successful thing. But really, the point was to embarrass her. Most people don't want to admit to plastic surgery. And to make her look bad. But all as part of the scheme that we talked about on Monday, really to silence the press. And Donald Trump is working very hard to silence the press. Whether it's through blackmail, through the National Enquirer magazine. Whether it's through the tweet he put out of him bashing CNN and encouraging violence against CNN and other news organizations, whether it's the press conferences where they only call on Breitbart and other wacko, libelous, I won't even call them news organizations, I'll just call them propaganda outfits, whether they're Russian propaganda outfits or whether they're right-wing. They're just not truth-telling. They're not journalists. They're not people whose first priority is truth. They're people who are willing to say or do anything in order to promote racism and in order to increase hatred and in order to elect Donald Trump. But he's gone further than that. That's not enough. He is literally shutting it down. He is literally stopping the daily press briefing, requiring it to be without cameras. CNN had to get a courtroom cartoonist, you know, sketch artist, because they don't allow cameras in some courtrooms for different reasons, far more reasonable reasons, although I think, frankly, cameras should be everywhere. This offends me on so many levels. One level, because I've worked very hard to bring cameras into the Virginia government. In fact, as a state delegate, I'm very proud to say that when I was first elected, and that was less than 2 years ago, friends, the only thing the Virginia government did online was to stream live the floor proceedings. They didn't even archive them. And due to my work in just less than 2 years, not only are they archiving and streaming the floor proceedings, but they're now going to archive and stream committee proceedings, which is vital, since every bill, virtually every bill, 99% of bills, before they hit the floor, go through committee. And that's where most bills die. And that's where bills are amended. That's actually the heart of the process. So I'm a firm believer in transparency. But the president is shutting down the free press as best he can. And the heart of the problem with this guy, and I got to say, it's a problem with many fascists. It's a problem, was a problem with Hitler, it's a problem with Mussolini, is they mix the silly with the dangerous, right? Kim Jong-il, right, looks really silly, strutting around with his bad haircut, and, you know, he's hardly a sex symbol, but I guess you have to say he's one, or you may be killed in North Korea. And yet he's an extremely dangerous person. And we talked about the ICBM that was developed while Donald Trump was focused on Rosie O'Donnell and Mika Brzezinski. What do you do? And I've done it myself, right? I just played a parody mocking Donald Trump, a really funny parody. I thought it was very good. Way to go, Randy Rainbow. Glad to give you a shout out for your very good work. In fact, some of the easiest ways I find to watch the news today is through comedy. Seth Meyers, by the way, if you haven't seen his show, it's particularly good. I want to give him a shout out. I've been watching a lot of him. I'm also a big fan of Samantha Bee and John Oliver. Really high, it's intellectual humor. It's not on a third grade level. It's on a high level, which I respect, because when the president doesn't know how to talk to a fourth grader because the fourth grader is smarter than he is, much less a fifth grader, I appreciate someone who can talk to me at my level. And frankly, it's good that they use high-class humor because Donald Trump probably doesn't understand it. But what are we to think of our child president? I mean, I used to attack George W. Bush, who I still think had a very childlike understanding of world events and a very unsophisticated understanding. I don't think Bush was a good president at all. But Bush didn't have the mental pathologies that Donald Trump has. The intense narcissism, the impulsiveness, the inability to restrain himself. He couldn't be as easily trolled. I didn't worry that, you know, too many foreign leaders would put one over on him. And if they did, because it happened with George W. Bush, I felt like his aides would mostly talk him out of it. I guess I'm bringing this all up because, well, I'm having a party Saturday. I'm having an impeach Trump party. It's a fundraiser for Democrats and the Virginia House delegates, but it's going to be a Trump-themed party. Impeach Trump-themed party. We got impeachment punch and all kinds of things. And a number of people have said to me quite seriously, my constituents, people I care about, have said, Mark, do you really want to impeach Trump? I mean, yeah, he's evil, and yeah, he's criminal, and yeah, he's uncontrollable, and yeah, he has the mentality of a bad, not a good, a bad acting 7-year-old. But if we impeach him, we get Pence. And Pence is smart. Pence is evil. Pence is careful. Pence might achieve some of these things that Donald Trump can't achieve precisely because he's so uncontrollable, precisely because he acts like a child. And sometimes I'm thankful that he is so incompetent. I mean, Richard Nixon was a very competent evil person. Donald Trump is a very incompetent evil person. That's one of the reasons why Nixon could get away with things for so long. And Donald Trump basically admits to obstructing justice on TV. What are we to think about this? How are we to react when our choices are between evil, competent, and dangerous, and silly, incompetent, and dangerous? I mean, I still support impeachment, but I actually think it's a decent argument. Except that I wonder if Pence would be weakened just the way Gerald Ford was weakened when Richard Nixon was forced from office. And frankly, Gerald Ford wasn't such a bad guy. I don't know. What do you think about all that? 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal America. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about, well, everything about Donald Trump and tweeting and the possibility of impeachment and the fact that we have an impulsive, narcissistic toddler as president of the United States, which is hard to say. It's part of the dangers of the Donald Trump era. Like, well, this is what fascists do, is they mix everything up so much. They tell so many lies that you get outrage fatigue, and therefore everything you say sounds extreme when actually it's true. We do have an impulsive, narcissistic, very strange, impaired individual as president of the United States. And what is the answer to all of this? I mean, I support impeachment, but Pence seems to be not just a homophobe, but a functioning human being. Would that be worse? 888-48-MARK. Let's go to Doug, line one in Sherman Oaks, California. Hey, Doug, how are you, sir?
Hi, Mark. I just wanted to remind you that in 1973, the vice president was Spiro Agnew until October of 1973, when he had to resign over scandals of his own.
Right, so, and Nixon appointed Ford.
Pardon?
Right, that's right. Then Nixon appointed Ford, correct.
Right. So that put Gerald Ford in the vice presidential seat. So he essentially replaced Spiro Agnew in the administration. And then all of the scandals of Watergate eventually brought down Richard Nixon, where he now replaced Richard Nixon as president of the United States. So his position was weak from the beginning. And also, not to underestimate the power of Congress, Congress was entirely controlled by Democrats in 1974. So your reluctance to wholeheartedly support impeachment for Donald Trump is well taken, because you now have an entirely Republican-controlled Congress. So,
although I have to tell you something, I don't think anything will happen in 2017. My guess is, and you know, I'm just guessing, that the report from the special prosecutor will come out in early 2018 is my guess, in spring, just on the basis that mostly special prosecutor reports tend to take about a year. And we'll describe, I think, some form of Russian collusion. I don't know the details. We will know then. And we'll talk about the many, many attempts by Donald Trump to obstruct justice. At that point, April or so of 2018, it's going to be 6 months before the election of 2018. I do not think Republicans will move to impeach in 2018. And then I think we're going to have an election that's largely based as a referendum on impeachment, which you've never had before in American history. It would be very interesting. And based on that, again, maybe I'm looking at a crystal ball and feeling very optimistic, but I feel like the Democrats can take the House of Representatives, even as gerrymandered as it is. Because even though we're gerrymandered, and even though Democrats tend to win the House of Representatives in numbers, but because of gerrymandering, they lose in seats, you know, if 34% continue to support Donald Trump, that's still two-thirds who don't. That would be enough for Democrats to take the House in 2018. And then, okay, so I'm really going out on a limb. Then if Pence is shown to be involved in any of this, you can impeach Pence and Nancy Pelosi becomes president of the United States. Now, all right, I'm dreaming. But I fully admit that's extremely – it's so unlikely as to be just sort of fun theoretical stuff. But –
No, I think that your timeline and your theory is probably correct. The one thing I would interject when you said the first election based on an impeachment, the 1976 presidential election, I believe, was largely an election based on impeachment, because the choice was between the guy that replaced the impeached president, who had been appointed by the impeached president to replace his chosen candidate Spiro Agnew, who had to resign in disgrace.
Well, with one exception, I think, and that was a fairly close election. Remember, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by far, far more than Carter beat Ford. I think the difference was not Ford per se appointed by Nixon. I think it was Ford's pardon of Nixon. I think if Pence were to pardon Donald Trump, then yes, the 2020 election would be about that. Pence, I think, is smarter than that. I think he's more evil than that. And I think he might just let Donald Trump hang to dry, which would be the smarter thing to do. In which case, you know, one thing, when I say it hasn't been done in American history, we haven't had an election where it was said, vote for me, I'll impeach the president. Nixon resigned in August 74, before the 74 midterms, before that could happen. So that's what I say, that's sort of unusual. But no, I agree. I think the difference in the Carter-Ford race was probably Ford, but I would say it was Ford's pardon rather than Ford's mere presidency. But it's whatever.
Right.
These are historical arguments that we can't really answer. Let me ask you this, Doug. You live in California. California is an island in this storm. There are only five states in the United States that have what we call a Democratic trifecta, where the Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the governorship of their respective states. Actually, half the states, so 25, are Republican, complete control, five under Democratic control, and there are 20 that have mixed control. Where I live, Virginia, is mixed control. Of the five, four are tiny states. No disrespect to Hawaii and Delaware and states like that, but California is the only state of significant size, and of course it's the largest state in the country. I'd be curious to know how it feels in California, because I think the rest of the country is very scared, but we are scared at a number of levels. We don't have the protection of our state government. Do you feel protected in a sense because California at least is not under Trump's control, or are people there just as upset as everywhere else?
I think I feel, as a Californian, I feel a little bit of sense of security in that we have a larger population than the country of Canada.
Sure.
And that we are the sixth largest economy on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the strength in numbers and the fact that, as you say, we have a Democratic trifecta here, I think that gives us a little bit of security. Everybody is quite concerned about the unpredictability of events that could, you know, easily spiral out of control at any moment. So no one knows the future, and we all feel reluctance, and we all feel a bit of hesitancy to exhale at this point.
Sure,
but,
no, absolutely, and plus you've got external
threats.
There
is definitely a bit of feeling of hey, we may be the leaders in the country in many other respects, technological, et cetera, and if we can be the leaders. With regards to something like single-payer health care, I mean, single-payer health care started in a single province in Canada.
Right.
So why not?
Well, lead the way, California, because in many, many fronts, you have led the way on a number of issues nationwide. And I got to say, as a non-Californian, although I used to live there 15 years ago, you know, a weary nation looks to you. So please do us proud as the one state that's sort of leading the anti-Trump agenda. And good for you, Governor Brown. I've been very impressed by your state. Thanks for calling in, Doug. I appreciate it. We only got about a minute left. Let me just say this. It is a weird dynamic between feeling like this country's being torn apart way too much and wanting to bring it together and feeling that we've got to call out this craziness. You know, it reminds me of the old fairy tale about the emperor who has no clothes. You know the story. The emperor is told he has his invisible suit on, that only he can see it's invisible, and he walks around naked, and no one wants to say anything to the emperor because the emperor has no clothes on, but they're all embarrassed. He's in charge, and the little child finally screams out and says, "The emperor has no clothes!" And suddenly everyone can see that he has no clothes. It is not unpatriotic to criticize your president. In fact, I would argue, at this time, it's a patriotic necessity. This is Mark Levine. I'll be back on Monday.